What's good, y'all? Your boy Brandon back again. Another episode of the On the Run podcast, man. This week in the studio, we have a very special guest. This is the first time we've had a fighter on set. We got one of the top featherweights in the PFL right now, man. 9-0. Brian Zurcher in the building, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's go.
Yeah, appreciate you. Appreciate you for giving us your time, bro.
No, brother. Thank you for having me. It's really an honor to be your first fighter. And nothing, let's get it going and let's have fun.
Yeah, for sure. So just to let the people know, you were supposed to have a fight just this past week. Unfortunately, it got canceled. We were excited to see you go. But yeah, we were just talking before the cameras were rolling about how difficult it is when a fight gets canceled, because you've not only invested all the time and stress into energy, into training, but also like the financial investment. So can you talk a little bit about what that's like when fights get canceled?
Yeah, you know, it was very unfortunate. I always seen it, but this is actually the first time that happens to me. I always seen a lot of fighters going through hard camps and getting close to the fight, it gets canceled. This was the first time that it happened to me. And man, it's not fun. Like you said, we were talking about training camps and stuff. We usually need at least 6 to 8 weeks to get ready for a fight. I was on my 7th week getting ready for this fight. Everything was going good. I had been on a diet, which is the hardest part.
Yeah,
for sure. For you guys, being on a diet for 6 to 8 weeks, it sucks. It was bad, man. I was ready for this fight. I was looking forward to fight this guy. And a week before the fight, I injured my back. And so we had to pull out the fight, and we had spent a lot of money. I had been on a diet. I had bought flying tickets for my coaches and everything. Everything was ready, and we had to pull out. And that's the game. That's the game we play. And nothing. We just getting ready for the next fight, trying to heal up right now and get another fight soon.
For sure. Can you share what the injury is, or we're not sharing?
It's nothing major. It was just I was doing my last sparring. Mm-hmm. I was doing some boxing sparring. I was on the 10th round, the very last one, my last sparring of the training camp, and then I got punched in the lower back. It was just a muscle. It was nothing crazy, but I went to see a doctor, and he was like, man, if there's no way you can fight. You need at least 2-3 weeks to heal up. It's nothing crazy, but if you keep going, it's going to get bad. So you shouldn't fight. Just rest. It's been 2 weeks. I feel good now. I've been running. I've been stretching. I've been doing a lot of things. And hopefully next week, I'm back to training full time.
That's the worst, no? Because if it's a big injury, you can understand. You're like, okay, I have to stay. But it's like, it's 2 weeks. Like, should I go for it? Should I not? Dude, did you think about just being like,
I'll go for it? Dude, I was trying to hide it so bad. Yeah. And then my coach Hector was asking me, hey, how do you feel? I was like, man. And then in my head, I was like, what do I say? I wanted to say I was 100% and I was feeling good. And I did. He was like, do you want to take the fight? I was like, 100%. Yeah, I mean, I'm ready for the fight. He's like, but when I saw you right now, you were limping. And I was like, no, I'm good. He's like, okay, we're going to go train right now. And if I see you make a face or anything, I'm going to have to pull out the fight. Dude, I try to hide it. And now I was training, and now my back was fucked up.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, when you eat something spicy and you try not to react, and it's just too much.
Yeah.
It just shows right in your face.
But like you said, I was so mad because it wasn't a broken bone, nothing like that. It was something that, it was just a muscle that was swollen and hurting. And I was like, man, it's crazy. But like we said, everything happens for a reason. I was supposed to fight one guy, and then they said the day I got hurt, that's when they told me I wasn't going to be fighting that guy. He had some visa issues, and so that fight wasn't going to happen. And then I went to train waiting for a new opponent. And when I was waiting for the new opponent, that's when I got hurt.
Yeah.
And then they sent me a new opponent, and I was like, there's no way I'm going to tell these guys I just got hurt. That happened on a Monday, and I waited like 5 days. I was like, I'm going to be good. I was taking medication and going, doing cold plunge and getting in the sauna, getting massages and everything. It just, I didn't heal. Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, there you go. But how often are because I imagine you're sparring hard, you're training hard, you're pushing your body to the limit. How often is a fighter really 100% when it's fight day? Or is there always like something?
There is always something.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have one guy telling you that he's 100% going into a fight, he's probably lying to you. There is always, like I was telling you, we spar 3-4 times a week during fight camp. And like I said, a fight camp is in between 6 to 8 weeks. There is always something going on. You never go 100% to a fight. I don't remember the last time I went 100% to a fight. Sometimes there is major things. Sometimes there is little things. But it happens very often that fighters go into a fight with something hurting or injured. But like I said, if it's something that is not required to pull out the fight, you don't want to do it because you already invested a lot of time and money. And it's not only you. All the people behind the scene, all your coaches and training partners and everything. So you want to make it happen as much as you can.
For sure. And how did you get started? I've watched a few of your interviews, did the research, did our due diligence. But can you tell us the story? I guess we have a little bit more time to talk about it. How did you actually get started into training? Like start fighting?
That was back in Mexico. For the people that don't know, I was born and raised in Mexico. I came to the States in 2014, 10 years ago. So the way I started training, I was like every other Mexican kid, I wanted to be a professional soccer player.
Wait, who's your team?
Las Chivas.
Las Chivas.
Yeah. I was born in Guadalajara.
Don't dislike the video.
Yeah, you know, that's the best team, Las Chivas.
All the America fans are going to be salty.
Puro Chivas. Yeah, so I wanted to be a professional soccer player, but man, so I used to play on a club with all my cousins and my friends and everybody, and everybody was good but me. And I was chubby when I was like 12, 13, I was already like almost 200 pounds. So I was a little fat.
So you were always the goalie?
Yeah. No, not even. They wouldn't let me play.
Nah, that's messed up.
The only way they would let me play, it was if like they were winning, I don't know, 5-1.
Like, all right, put Brian in.
Yeah, they'll let me play.
They can't come back.
Dude, they'll let me play the last 5 minutes. Only if they were winning, I don't know, 4-1, 5-1, that there was no way I can fuck that up and lose, you know? Man, and I used to be on the bench, like, what the fuck? I used to tell my dad, hey, I'm playing Saturday, come see me. My dad used to go to the games and, son, are you going to play today? And I was like, I hope. And another Saturday that I didn't play. And so one of my friends, he had been training Muay Thai for like 2-3 years. And just talking with him, I was like, man, I want to do something that I don't have to depend on other people and I can just give my max and try to be good, you know? And he was like, hey, you should come try a class with me. And so I went and I liked it. I fell in love with the sport. And so I have an uncle. He was my trainer, Cesar Mego Palomera. He was a world champion, and I was already 12 years old, but I didn't know him. My family always spoke about him, but I had never met him. And so I was like, man, I'm gonna try it. So I did my first class, and he had an academy. So, and then I went to his school. I started training, and he was like, man, I think you can be good. So he was like, do you want to fight? Oh, I was like, that wasn't my plan, but it sounds fun.
Right.
And so he got me a fight. And within like, I think it was about 4 or 5 months into training. So I had my first Muay Thai fight.
Did you win?
Yeah, I had to lose a lot of weight. Yeah. So in like 4 or 5 months, I lost a lot of weight and I won. I won and I became a little bit more popular, and you know, I lost weight, I felt confident, and it was cool. So
how old were you? 14?
I was 15.
15? Yeah, around that age, it's like if you have to be the best fighter or the best at soccer. That's how you become popular.
That's how you become popular. I was like, and definitely I'm not gonna be the best one in soccer, so I gotta do something else.
Yeah.
And that's how I started with martial arts.
And did you fall in love with it right away? I'm guessing after you trained so hard and then you actually see that you won. And not only did you win, but you know, when you play soccer, the team wins. You're like, oh yeah, we won. But when you win by yourself, you're like, I did this by myself. Is that what really made you fall in love with the sport?
Yeah, some of that. Yeah. It was a great feeling just being in there. But I think, you know, the adrenaline got me. It's something that you're never going to get on a soccer game or basketball game or a football game. I think fighting is very special and different. The feeling that you get, and especially that as I started with my rifle, you know, I won my first fight. That was a feeling of, man, I can. Yeah, this is something that I want to experience again and again and again. And this is only a fight in front of 50 people. I cannot imagine how it feels fighting in a big arena in front of 20,000 people, you know? And something, one of the main things that got me into fighting, it was, I'm telling you, my uncle, he was already a world champion. And one of the things that stuck to me is that he was traveling around the world and getting paid for fight. I was like, man, this is something that sounds cool, you know,
so fighting not around. Not only can I kick people's asses, but I can see the world and I'm getting paid for it.
Dude, getting paid for punching people in the face and being on TV and being all cool. And yeah, that's kind of what got me into the sport.
Yeah. And what does that feel like? Because you said a little bit, you touched on it a little bit. You said the adrenaline. So to me, it's like you can watch soccer, you know, when it's 1-1, 92nd minute. It's like, okay, like everything's that's tense, nothing, right? Bro. Or football, you know, it's the last, you know, quarter of the fucking Super Bowl. Your team is down, like you have to score. Basketball, like last second shot. But in fighting, the whole fight, in any instant, it can be that moment because either you can knock the other guy out, he can knock you out, you're getting choked out. Like, it happens like that. So what is that adrenaline like, being like in the cage?
I mean, there is nothing that I have experienced close to that, you know? Like you said, anything can happen at any given second. So you have to be aware of everything in the cage. You have to forget about everything else in the world. You have to just be, it's you and that guy and your corner. That's all that matters. But like I said, there is nothing that can compare to what I feel when I'm in there. You feel like everything slows down. You forget about everything in the world. The only thing that matters is getting the win, getting your hand raised, getting that double check, and going home and celebrate with the family. That's all that matters. The adrenaline, I love that. Yeah, I wouldn't change it for anything. I love doing that.
How hard is it to hear your coach when you have all these people just yelling in the arena?
Actually, you know, it's not that hard. Sometimes, yeah, of course, it's going to be very loud, people screaming and also trying to coach you. But when someone goes in your corner, it's people that you already have a big connection with them, you know? So with the person that you have in your corner, you have to trust them 100% because everything happens so fast that whatever they tell you, you cannot think about it twice. You got to just do it. So we drill for that too, you know, when we're getting ready for fights, we get in the cage, I'll get one of my sparring partners and we'll do 3, 4, 5 rounds in the cage. And I have my corner, sometimes we have music and stuff like that, trying to simulate. And like I said, when I go into the cage, I forget about everything else. And the only thing that I try to do is listen to my corner.
Yeah, you said it in one of your post-fight interviews, you said like, it's like a video game. They're controlling me. I'm just inside the cage doing what they tell me. I think you said something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. When I go in my fights, that's how it feels. These guys are giving me directions. And like I said, whoever is in your corner, you have to trust those people. So every time I go into the cage and I'm fighting, they just give me orders. And that's the first thing I do. You as a fighter, you have to trust your instinct. Sometimes they're gonna tell you to go right, but if you see to the left, it's an opening, you also have to trust your instincts. But most of the times, whatever they tell me to do, that's what I do, and it feels like a video game.
Yeah. In some of your recent fights, the opening's been to the left, right? Always that left hook.
With the left hook.
Uppercut, left hook, right?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the one last year, yeah, we went, but it was things that we saw before the fight. Those two combinations, they gave me those combinations. They usually, they're the ones that study the fights. They just give me, I like watching fights once or twice to whatever I see, but and then my coaches, my corner, they're the ones that study and they tell me, okay, so this guy, we're going to go, this is what we're going to do. And that's what we drill throughout the camp. That's what we're doing. And that one with the uppercut, left hook, my uncle was like, bro, we're going to get this guy like this. He kicks, but he's never setting up the kicks with hands or anything. So you're going to get him with the upper and the hook. And it was like that. And this last one, hey, how good it was, that knockout.
Put his lights out. Folded him like a fucking chair, bro.
Like crazy. A fucking wet noodle.
Yeah. That's laundry. Yeah. He just, yeah. The one before that, same thing. Right, yeah. Before that, right? And what was crazy about the fight before was when I saw it, I thought you hit the upper and he was already out. It hit him in the chest.
Yeah.
It didn't even hit him on the face and it just on the, right on the jaw. Hook. Bro. Yeah. Hook, yeah. Put him out. And he's like, no, I was okay. No, you weren't, buddy.
Yeah, bro. My left hook is money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Hey. But I wish it would have been in the UFC. That would have been 50K, baby.
50K. Yeah. Yeah. But soon.
Soon.
It's gonna y'all could punch me for like 10K. Yeah, I don't need that much. I'm just saying, man.
We got to win to make that 50K.
Or lose. I don't care. Just 10K.
Fight of the night.
Yeah. Dude, but what if you lose all your teeth and broken nose and everything? It's You're going to spend more than 10K to fucking fix that shit.
Listen, punch me for the 10K, then I'm going straight to go get the veneers. That's easy money, yeah.
But one thing that I love is like a typical Mexican, you know, anytime we have some kind of event, we have like 20 family members at whatever event is. You travel deep. Anytime you have a fight, your mom is there, your tías are there, like everybody in your family is there. So you've always had that support. And you spoke about it in an interview that there was a point in your life where your mom had to come to the U.S. and you were in Mexico by yourself. She was sending you back money. And that really, like, I identify with that because I had something similar in my life. And those, to me, are the stories that I love to tell because they really make you understand whoever it is, whether it's an artist, a fighter, an entrepreneur, it tells you who they are as a person, right? Because we can all look at the left hook knockouts all night, and those are amazing. But this is what really makes you you. So can you share a little bit of that story with us?
Yeah, you know, that's something that has been kind of like personal and I haven't shared much about it and not many people knows about it. They all know I came from Mexico and I came because I wanted to fight this and that. But they don't know how hard it was for me to come to the States, you know. Like you said, like, you know, my mom, she came to the States when I was 3 or 4 years old. So I stayed with my grandma over there. My mom came and the plan was to, she was going to come and then a few months later, she was going to bring me with her. And, for one thing or another, legal stuff, you know, I couldn't come. So we wanted to do it the right way. So I went and tried to get my visa, and I got denied 3 times in a row. It didn't work. And then the lights and the scenario was like, man, I'm never going to be able to go to the States legally. So when I was 10 years old, I tried to come to the States. I was 10 years old and illegally. And I got caught. They sent me back to Mexico. Yeah, it was hard, you know. But like we said in the beginning of the podcast, everything happens for a reason. Eventually, when I tried to come, I wasn't in the sports. I didn't know martial arts. I was chubby. I told you I was fat. I was eating a lot, and I was just being a kid. But and then they sent me back to Mexico. So I went back to living with my grandma, my second mom. And And then I got into martial arts. I got to know the sport. I started training, and then I became a resident. I got my green card when I was 16. And then that's when I came to the States legally. I had met martial arts. I was already into the sport. So if you go back from 3 years old to like 16, that's when I was able to come. When my mom came, we thought it was going to be only a few months that I wasn't going to be with her. So it was hard, you know. And at that moment, when they sent me back, I was so close. I was already in the United States, and they sent me back. And so at that time, we didn't understand why. Fuck, I was already in the United States.
So you did cross.
Yeah.
Where were you? California?
Arizona? California.
California.
Yeah.
Were you with family at the time? When you were you by yourself or with family?
I was by myself. Yeah, I was by myself. It's a long story, and I was 10 years old. I don't really remember everything 100%. But yeah, now we look back, and I went back to Mexico. I met martial arts, and then now I'm a United States citizen, you know? So now we understand that everything happens for a reason. It was hard, but it taught me a lot in life, you know? You're not allowed to give up. And everything happens for a reason. Now we're here. And now I'm sharing with you guys this that I never share with anybody, you know, not in the cameras.
Yeah. How difficult was it to rebuild the connection with your mom? Like, did you have trouble with that at all?
Not at all. It was because I'm telling you, you mentioned already, you saw my past interviews. My mom, she was always present. She was always there since the day she left. She was calling me every single day, every weekend. She was sending money every month, every 2 months. She was sending big bags full of clothes and and video games and everything. So when we saw each other, it felt natural, you know. I was a kid, and I'm her only son. It wasn't that hard to like build that connection. Because she was always there. She was always doing homework with me. It felt like she never left. Mm. You know? It wasn't hard to build that connection.
That's good. And you guys are super close now, right?
Yeah, right now I can say she's my best friend, you know. We like traveling. That's the biggest connection we have. We like traveling. We've been to Europe. We've been to a lot of different countries in Europe, and here in the States, we've been to so many different states. There's times that she's like, hey, do you want to go, for example, do you want to go to Washington this weekend? And we just catch a fly and we go to Washington, and then we're in Washington and we were supposed to be there for 3 days, and we did already everything we wanted to do in the first day. And then she's like, hey, we have 2 more days. We can go to Canada. We can go to Vancouver. It's 3 hours driving. Let's get a car. And then, yeah, we have a good time together. We go to concerts. We watch TV. We're very close.
That's good. And I think it shines in the way, like, you work, because you have a very strong work ethic. Like, we were talking about this, just how much dedication you put into, because it's not easy, right? The dieting, the training, the whole day, the sacrifice it takes. But you have something, like, I identify a lot with that, because like we grew up the same. Like I feel like a lot of people have the same story where we see our parents just sacrifice, right? Because it can't be easy for your mom to say, I have to leave my 3-year-old son and go to the United States and work and do this. I know it's not easy, but it gives us like motivation to be like, if they can do that big sacrifice, I can put in 2 more hours of sparring. I can sit in the sauna for a little while longer. I can cut the weight, right?
Dude, that's actually what really gets me through training camps and tough days, you know? And just like you said, when I'm tired and I do 1 or 2 trainings and I know I have to do another one and I'm feeling tired, dude, even to this day, like even today, my mom, she left home like at 8 in the morning, and she came back like 7 right before I came here. She had just coming back home from work. So it's really hard to not put pushed to the limits when she's been doing this for 20 years. Since the day when I was 3 years old and she came, she's been doing the same thing every single day, just working hard and looking for a better future for her and especially for us, you know, for me. I'm her only son, and I know this last 20 years, she's been putting in the work, man. And I want to change that soon. And I know it's going to happen, you know. That's why I work so hard. And the work ethic, man, I'm not going to stop until I make it happen, until she can be free. What is it called?
Financially free.
Financially free. You know, whenever I want her to be able to say, okay, today I'm not going to have to work 10 hours. I'm going to work 5, but because I want to, not because I have to. And she's been sacrificing. She's been doing everything for me, and it's going to pay back. And the only thing that I can do is just give everything, you know, everything into what I do. Nothing is warranted. It's not warranted that I'm going to make it and I'm going to be, you know, millionaire. But I just want to be able to say I gave it all and I did it for her.
Absolutely.
To pay her back.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. And one day we're going to look back at this interview like, man, he was our first fighter on the podcast. Yeah, now he's got $10 million. He don't even know who we are anymore.
We're gonna be kicking it together. Yeah. And we're gonna be having more talks like this.
I would love that. Like I seen there's a podcast I really like. It's called Flagrant. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but they had Israel Adesanya like when he was just coming up. I think he had just gotten into the UFC, maybe one or two fights in. And they became like close friends. So now he does that podcast like all the time. And obviously we saw he became champion of the world, you know, be Alex Pereira. So it's like I remember watching that first episode and then I had no idea he was going to become that. And then seeing him get to where he got to. I love stories like that. Like, that's what I love is just finding people who are like really good people and just seeing them grow and achieve their dreams and succeed. Like to me, those are the stories I love telling.
Yeah, we're gonna blow shit up, man. I'm gonna mark my words. I'm gonna, in PFL, there has never been a Mexican champion.
Yep.
I'm gonna be the first Mexican champion in PFL, and yeah, we're gonna make history. We're gonna make a lot of money, and show people that everything is possible.
Sir, yes, sir.
And hire your new strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah, yeah. Before starting the podcast, I was telling them that I need a strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah.
And the openings,
aka punching bag.
Well, Brian, I had a question for you. So, besides your mother, and I know this is very important to you, but what else motivates you to keep on fighting, to keep on going to where you're at?
Yeah. So, my main thing is my mom. But also, I want to open doors for Mexican kids, Hispanic kids, but Mexicans in a specific, you know, because I come from very humble beginnings, you know, from a little town in near Puerto Vallarta. Nobody knows about this little town. And
saludos
a toda la raza en Jarretaderas.
Cuy, cuy.
Yeah, but something that really motivates me is keep opening doors for the kids that are coming behind me, you know. Where I'm from, there's a lot of kids training. They see me on TV, they see me doing interviews, and they all want an opportunity like this. So one of my main motivations is trying to bring those cameras and those opportunities to these kids. And I want to have my legacy, you know. I want to make history. I want, when people talks about Mexican MMA, I wanted to bring up my name, you know. I was the first Mexican to become a champion in PFL. And that's motivation to me, you know.
You train at a Randy Couture's gym here in Vegas, right?
I train at a few different gyms here in Las Vegas. So my MMA sparring, I do it at Extreme Couture. Randy Couture. That's where I do my MMA sparring, my wrestling, We have a lot of champions and contenders and a lot of guys coming up, you know, some of the best fighters in the world. And then my jiu-jitsu, I do it Cobrinha with Hector Vasquez.
Yep.
He's my jiu-jitsu coach and also my head coach in MMA. And just recently, I started training boxing with Capetillo. A lot of people know Capetillo. He trains Brandon Moreno.
A lot of good fighters train in his gym.
He went viral not too long ago. Yeah, you saw that video?
Yeah, he still had them hands.
Yeah, he got them hands and kicks too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, not bad for a boxing coach throwing kicks.
Yeah,
when he was with Masvidal. So that's where I do my boxing. And I'm always traveling in Las Vegas from Extreme Couture to Cobrinhas to do jiu-jitsu to do boxing. That's my main three gyms.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because Randy Couture, like I remember when UFC first started getting popular, my dad would watch it. And we're Mexican, right? We watch soccer, we watch boxing. But MMA was something different at that time. And I remember sometimes, like, he would just be watching. I'm like, what are you watching? And he would be like, who do you think is going to win? The guy in the black trunks or the guy in the white trunks? I'm like, I don't give a fuck, Dad. Like, why are you asking me? But Randy Couture was one of those fighters that I remember, one of the first fighters I remember watching in that era, like, watching him fight, like, Chuck Liddell. Like, that fight to me, I was like, what the fuck is going on? And who were some of your earliest MMA inspirations?
When I got into MMA, the Spider, Anderson Silva was...
Oh, yeah, my goodness.
Yeah, he was the best fighter. Also, two Brazilians, him and Jose Aldo. He was one of my biggest inspirations.
Chama.
And Chama, Brazilians, huh?
Shout out to Brazilians.
And they also come from very humble beginnings, you know. They come from the favelas and stuff like that. When I saw them fight, I started doing my research. And you can see they come from the favelas. They don't have a lot of things over there, too. They probably have it even worse than us. So I was like, man, if these guys are doing it right now, we can do it, too. But definitely, I was looking up to those guys.
Yeah, Anderson Silva was a beast back then. Like, I remember all his fights were just so entertaining to watch. Like, what he would do, how he would be in the ring. Like, he was the first one I remember that had, like, that, like, showmanship about him.
Yeah, he was so precise. It was crazy. He was fighting with his hands down and stuff like that. And he wasn't even that strong. His punches weren't that hard, but he was so precise. And he just needed one punch. And, yeah. He made the sport very popular until Conor McGregor came and he blew it up, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody started knowing about martial arts. But you know, fun fact about Randy Couture, he's the oldest UFC champion.
Yeah, I remember watching him and like I was like, dude, that guy looks old, like his hairline receding and shit. But he was actually old. Like I think he started... I don't want to give the wrong number. I think he was 38 or something like that when he started.
When he started doing MMA.
Yeah. And it's like, what the fuck? And you see this dude wrestling, like taking people down, like bullying people. Like before Khabib started the whole wrestling trend that's now, he was bullying Chuck Liddell. He was bullying like everybody. And he had power too.
Yeah.
Like he was trading with like Chuck Liddell at the time. I say Chuck Liddell a lot because that was the guy I remember. He had the mohawk. Mm-hmm. He was putting people to sleep.
The Iceman.
Iceman. Yeah, he was a badass, bro. I hope one day we can interview him. But yeah, Randy gets in the cage with him. He's trading with him and he's like hurting him. I'm like, what is going on? So yeah, he's definitely. And then he was the first two division champion.
Yeah. What was it? 205, and then he went up to light heavyweight.
Yeah.
Light heavyweight and heavyweight.
Yeah. I think heavyweight first, then light heavyweight, which is crazy. So, yeah.
Damn, that's crazy. And he was older, bro. When he became champion, I think he was already like 44, 45.
Yep.
Fighting, I don't know, 33-year-old, 35-year-old. But that's when the sport was... You know, when you had one guy that was very good at something, but there wasn't really good MMA fighters,
like
you
complete
know?
Fighters.
Yeah, complete fighters, well-rounded fighters.
Mm-hmm.
He had really good hands in Greco-Roman wrestling.
Yep.
But yeah, to be a good fighter, I think those are really good base starting points, you know, wrestling and boxing, and that's what he had. And yeah, he was very successful with that. He was very good with wrestling. And then a lot of these guys that are good with the wrestling, they fall in love with the power they have. And then they forget about wrestling and then they just want to knock people out.
Yeah.
Randy was one of those.
For sure. Is that like, if you were to like start fighting from scratch, let's say you find someone on the street who's like, I know nothing. I don't know how to throw a punch. I don't know how to wrestle.
At this age. Like, yeah. That's what I want to add on. Like, because how old are you now?
I'm 28.
Okay. But you've been doing MMA since like.
Like fighting. 15. Some kind of like, martial
since
arts.
A youngin. Like if I started today, how long do you think it would take for me to like, at least not die in the ring?
Oh no, a better question I think would be like, what things should you focus on? Yeah. Like, should it be boxing? Should it be wrestling? Should it be jujitsu? Should it be, like, what would you say, recommend him to do?
Yeah.
I'll say wrestling.
Wrestling?
Yeah. Wrestling, you can take someone down and just lay on top of them and just kill the time, you know? Because, yeah.
What about like street fight though?
Street fight?
Yeah.
It could be, I always want to say jiu-jitsu, but if you grab someone's neck, your hands are busy, you know, and someone can from...
Stomp you.
Yeah, someone can come from the back and fucking stab you or something.
Illegal weapons, street weapons.
Hey, he said a street fight. He said street fight. Someone can come and hit you in the head with a bottle or something, you know? Anything. So I'll say boxing.
Boxing?
Yeah, maybe... Yeah, I think Canelo has a better chance of surviving in the streets than someone that is really good at wrestling, because this guy has to bend down and take you down, and Canelo can be just bam, 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 you know? Just
put people to sleep.
But, like, what are those, like, intangibles that, like, make a good fighter? Like, you need, what, like, good hand-eye coordination, like, be quick on your feet. Like, what are those things that, like, a good MMA fighter needs to have? Really have like a successful career.
No, you need all of those. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be at the highest level, you have to be fast, you have to have good eyes, your reaction has to be there. And to be a good MMA fighter, you have to be good at many different disciplines, many different martial arts. You cannot, it's not like 25 years ago that the Gracies
pull guard, just sit on the ground and pull guard, like, bro.
Yeah, it's not gonna happen. Not anymore.
Nah.
No, now all the good fighters, all the top fighters are good at everything, you know, and little details are what makes the difference with those fighters. But like, to be elite level right now, you have to be good at everything.
But like, how did you know you were like how long did it take you for to go like, okay, I think I got something here?
When I started training at Extreme Couture, you know, before that I was an amateur fighter, and I always knew I had the balls, you know, to be a good fighter, but balls is not enough.
Yeah.
And then I started training at Extreme Couture, and so I started training with all these high level guys. A lot of guys that are ranked in the UFC, I was still an amateur. And so they were asking me to do rounds with them, and I was doing really good, and I was winning some of those rounds when I was an amateur, and these guys had already 15, 20 professional fights, and I was doing really good. I was like, man, I know if I take it serious and I do everything that these guys are doing, I can be good. Because at that time, I was still an amateur 4 years ago. I only been a professional for like 3 years. And at that time, I was going to school. I was going to CSN. I was working at the Link as a valet parking. And I was training. And I was like, okay, so plan A is fighting. That's what I like the most.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't work, I was going to CSN. I wanted to be a firefighter. I was taking some classes over there. So I was like, if A doesn't work, I'm going to go to B. Yeah. And if B doesn't work, I'll keep working at the Link. I have insurance.
Yeah.
I was in the union. And then I went to this place and I was like, man, if right now I'm going to school and I'm working and I'm training not even full time, if I do it full time, I feel like I can be good and I can compete with all those guys. That's when I said, okay, I'm going to leave school and I'm going to stop working. I'm going to go from being full-time, I'm going to only do 2 days a week. And I'm going to go full-time with the fighting. And I turned pro. And 3 years later, now we're here.
9-0 in 3 years. Another thing to talk about is it's either knockout, submission, or majority decision. There's been like no room to say like, oh, maybe it could have gone another way.
That was too close.
Yeah, there's no room for anything.
Yeah, man. When I go into a fight, you know, people goes to the show and they pay a ticket, and what they want to see is they want to see violence. They want to see entertainment. Someone get knocked out, you know, or shocked out. And so I like pleasing the people, you know. They go pay for something, and that's what I want to provide. I want to provide entertainment. So I always try to finish my fights. Like you said, I never been in a boring fight. I always give my all. And yeah, the numbers don't lie. Yeah.
Speak for themselves.
Numbers don't lie.
They ask and you give them the left hook.
That's
all you need.
That was one of my questions too. Like, what makes, because I know you said that in one of your previous interviews, you're like, the last thing that people can expect from you is a boring fight. What makes a boring fight though?
What makes a boring fight?
And what makes your fights not boring?
Man, my fights are never boring because I'm always going forward looking for finishes. And then there's other fighters that they go in there and all they think about is winning the fight. Doesn't matter how, you know. They can hug you for 5 minutes, 15 minutes, control, the whole fight, yeah. And they won the fight, you know. And I respect that too, because at the end of the day, the priority is winning the fight. But for some fighters, for me, it's going in there and giving the people what they want. Of course, I want to win. I prepare myself for every single scenario possible in the fight. That's why I do my wrestling. I do my jiu-jitsu. I'm always well prepared, but I'm always going forward, taking the risk, trying to finish fights.
And I feel like that's rewarded a lot, especially more in MMA than other sports. Like, for example, boxing became this thing where if you don't have an O, then it's like you're not going to get paid anymore or something like that. But the good thing about MMA is that we don't care about that.
Yeah.
If you're entertaining, I'd rather pay for entertaining fighter who's like 10-6 than a fighter who's like 13-0. But it's just like you said, he's just wrestling, just trying to get points and backing away, running away the whole fight. I'm like, I don't want to watch that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing about MMA. Now we see a lot of champions with 3, 4, 5, 6 losses in their records. You know, you can lose a fight and then go on a 6-7 winning streak and then fight for the title and become the champion. And like you said, in boxing, unfortunately, names like Floyd Mayweather, that's what they did, you know. If you have one loss in your record, you're trash.
Yeah.
And it's not like that, man. There is so many good fighters with one or two losses, and they don't get the same opportunities as other guys because they had lost one fight already. And now I think that's changing because that's what we do in MMA. The best fight the best.
Yep.
And that's the way it should be. And I feel like in the past years, a lot of people stopped watching boxing because they noticed the people's not stupid, you know. And you can lie to the people. People stop watching fights, boxing fights, because the best wasn't fighting the best. The best was fighting whoever they wanted to fight because they were the A side.
Yeah.
It was just maintaining that.
Just title. Keep building record and say I'm the best, but you're not fighting the best.
Yeah. And the other thing I love about MMA is you have more of these like trilogy fights or, you know, four fights. In boxing, you don't see that as much anymore. Like growing up, I remember we used to have those like one of the biggest is like Pacquiao Marquez, 4 fights. And in the last one, he finally got the knockout. I'm like, man, that was such a good, like looking back at it, it's like, I love watching those fights and you don't see those anymore.
Yeah.
Now it's just, I beat you once and it was by split decision, but we're not fighting again because it wasn't a close fight. It's like, come on.
Yeah. Even though it was a split decision.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
it doesn't make sense. But in MMA, yeah, we see it. We see it all the time. Brandon Moreno.
Yeah, exactly.
He had to fight Figueiredo how many times.
That was one of the,
classic.
Classic.
And there is so many like that. But that's why I love MMA. You know, you can't lie in MMA. Either you are the best or you're not, or you belong to the top, and you can't lie. You always, and that's a good thing. You know, these companies, they make you fight the best because that's what people wants to see.
Of course.
And it's crazy how MMA keeps evolving and getting better. Now, all the guys are good, man. Everyone's good.
Yeah.
If you want to be one of the elite fighters, you have to be 100% in this. And little things are the ones that make the difference. And yeah, I love this.
In your opinion, like at the moment, excluding yourself, because there's going to be bias, who's like the GOAT of MMA, the greatest of all time?
Right now, man, I think John Jones.
Jones?
Still. Yeah. I mean, if you want to count Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Jones, even though he's older now, Jones. I mean, also, Ilia Topuria is really good.
He's a beast.
Even though we haven't seen him fight a lot, he's there definitely. And I don't know if you agree with me, Islam.
Yeah. Great fighter. But Topuria is interesting because I watched the Volkanovski when he fought Yair, and that hurt me as a Mexican because I'm like, man, our boy went out bad. But then Topuria just...
The way he made it look with the...
Made it look the exact same way. Like,
yeah, because crazy. Volkanovski, he had been at the top for many years, and he looked untouchable.
Yeah.
He beat how many times Max Holloway, who makes everybody look like exactly. kids, you know? And then he goes and does that to Max Holloway 3 times and then to Yair. And then Topuria comes and does that to him.
Yeah.
You're like, man, this guy is on another level.
Yeah.
But you know, styles make fights.
Of course.
And we need to see Topuria fighting more guys in different styles. And then he can be in the talk for the GOAT, you know? He needs to fight more guys. I think at this point, Islam Makhachev, he has way more fights in the UFC. He's fought so many good fighters, and I think he's above him in the GOAT list.
Yeah.
But I think if he keeps doing this to guys, he's definitely gonna be in the GOAT list.
For sure. And when you're in a fight, I was thinking about this like right before coming here, but. I've spent a lot of time like trying to get better at interviewing people, like asking questions, and everywhere I look, it's like, okay, part of it is preparation, and then the other part is just like go, right? Because I can come up with a list to ask you, but if I just stick to the list, it's a boring interview because we don't go anywhere.
It's a job interview.
Exactly. Is MMA the same? Like, I assume like it's different depending on like if you're a beginner or if you've had like a lot of rounds of experience, but is it the same in that you prepare, you study film, you're like, okay, this is the game plan. But once you get in the ring, like, or in the cage, it's just different because you're like, oh, like this is not what we were expecting. Like, how often do you have to improvise?
Almost all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can go into a fight and you had been studying and working for something. And most of my fights that happen, you know, there's a fight that I'm never going to forget. And I don't know if you have seen my fight against Scotty Stockman.
Mm-hmm.
It was my first fight in PFL. I was a big underdog. They took me to PFL because they needed a fighter. I was just to fill up the spot. But so we saw a lot of film for this guy. It was the opportunity that I had been waiting for. You know, I was only 2-0. And at 2-0, you don't really get those opportunities to be on a big stage, being on PFL with only 2 fights. So we did a lot of work. We studied this guy. We knew he was a wrestler. He was like 3-time state champion in Oregon. And most of his fights, he grappled. He did a lot of wrestling, taking down and keeping in the ground. So for 6 weeks, we're working, man.
Wrestling.
We're working, wrestling, defense, not offense.
Yeah, take defense. Down defense.
Yeah, take down defense and this and that. And we're going to keep the fight standing. I'm going to stop the takedowns and we're going to keep it standing. I'm going to box and I'm going to kick. What I do, I go in the first round. Bro, this guy rocked the shit out of me, bro. The first two punches, bam, bam. He was also Golden Gloves. So he had like 90 boxing amateur fights and like three professional fights. Something that we didn't know. We found out in the fight, and then I did my research after and I saw that. But my corner, they start screaming at me, Hector. He's like, go for the takedown. Go for the takedown. We need to change the strategy. And I was like, man, I kept it standing in the first round.
Yeah.
And then I go to the corner and he's like, bro, you need to fucking wrestle this guy. You need to take him down. And I was like, but that's not what we work.
Wrestler, yeah.
That's not what we work on. And he's like, just go. And he told me, this is what makes good fighters being able to improvise and change strategy in the middle of the fight. And that's something that really stuck to me in my head, you know? So that was the first fight, but definitely not the last one. We always have to like go as the fight is going, you know? And you can see the tendencies of the fighters, and that's something that you need to work on and be aware, but you cannot rely on that 100%. Me, that's something that I like, you know? You see me, you can see my last fight, but and then when I don't have a fight, I'm a gym rat. I'm always in the gym trying to learn new things. That's when you have the time to keep adding tools to the toolbox, because my opponent is going to go based of what he saw in my last fight.
Of course.
And my job as a good fighter and being at the high level, my job is going into my next fight with a new arsenal. Different tools, different strategy. Because, like I said, he watched film and he thinks I'm going to do that. And they all think for this fight, they all thought, we kept working and we said, okay, they're going to expect the left hook again. So we've been working on little things. And yeah, you cannot rely on what you see. And you have to improve as the fight goes.
Yeah. And it's a lot harder for me, in my opinion, in MMA because you don't have as much time. Mm-hmm. And also there's so many different things that can come your way. Like one of my favorite fighters to watch is Tank Davis, right? Because he's just like, he gets in the ring and everybody's like, oh, you know, whoever he's fighting does okay for the first two, three, four rounds.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, this is it. He's going to lose. And then six, seven rounds comes. Turn the light switch, gets turned off because he's in there just learning, like, okay, where's the opening?
He's making the reads.
Yeah. Canelo does a lot of the same things. He starts off a little bit slow, but I can see why in boxing it happens because you have 12 rounds, right? You can maybe, if you're an elite fighter at that level, you can give away three, four rounds and be like, I'll still get the knockout or I can
come
win
back up
by decision. Yeah. But in MMA, you have three or five rounds and that is not enough time. And not only that, but in boxing, it's just, you know, maybe just what punches are coming, combinations, if they're coming at you or maybe fighting like to try to counterattack. But in MMA, there's so many different things, right? Somebody could be a striker, they could be a wrestler, it could be jiu-jitsu, they could try to fight so many different ways. Like, it's much more difficult to improvise, would you say?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, like I said, you cannot give rounds, you know? In MMA, you only have three rounds, usually three rounds. You know, when you fight for a belt, you have five rounds. But yeah, you cannot give out rounds. So you study patterns and what they do, but as you go in the fight, yeah, you have to, well, for me, like I said, I'm always looking for the finish. I try to make reads the first minute, 30 seconds, and from there we see what type of energy they're bringing into the fight, and we go from there. Yeah, I never been on a five-round fight. But I'm very excited and looking forward to that. I know it's going to have to be a little bit different, but not much. Not much for me. I'm going to go and do the same thing, what I do.
Yeah.
And go from there.
How different does a gas tank have to be between like 3 to 5 rounds?
Like I said,
I
never been in a five-round fight. But in the gym, I'm always doing 5, 6, 7 rounds. And one of my main weapons is my cardio. I do a lot of cardio. I love running. And then with Capetillo, Coach Capetillo, we do a lot of mountain running. So we go to Mount Charleston on Saturdays. We do 6, 7 miles over there at high elevation. So cardio is never a problem with us. Yeah, we grapple a lot. We box a lot. So the cardio, the type of cardio is different from boxing. You can have the best gas tank in boxing, but if you go and do grappling and you never done grappling, my God. Yeah, you feeling, and then if you fighting someone that knows what they're doing, you're going to feel like you're drowning.
Yeah.
And it's not fun.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it's not fun.
I'm guessing it's just because the muscles you're working are different, right? Because it's like if you have cardio, it's cardio, but it's like anybody can run. But like, yeah, if you have to defend takedowns or you're just getting smothered, and especially because, you know, if you get taken down to the ground, you get body triangle, something, it's like you can't breathe normally.
Yeah, you can't breathe. And you're getting punched or elbow in the face.
Yeah, fuck that. It's a long day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a long day. That's why you gotta be well-rounded.
Yeah, for sure.
Not leave room for things like that. Because if not, it's gonna be a long night and it's not gonna be fun.
Fuck no. You guys got any other questions?
Yeah, I got one. Speaking of like being well-rounded though, I know we've been talking about like the physical component of what it takes to be a great MMA fighter, but what is like the mental component as well? Like, I think for a lot of people that are in sports, you know, sometimes they might struggle with their mental health or like, you know, that's a big task. Like, how are you exactly taking care of your mental health since you've been on this journey?
I think everyone's different, you know. For me, that's never been a problem. We talk about it. I know what I want. And having the presence of my mom and all the things that are important for me, having those with me, I never lose motivation, you know. I always know what I want. And I'm not scared. But for everyone's different, you know. I know a lot of friends, fighters, that they work with. Now it's becoming a lot more popular. And that's something I haven't done. And I'm not going to say that's something I'm never going to do. But it's becoming a lot more popular working with sports psychologists and stuff like that. And I see a lot of friends that they do that and they say it's very helpful. And that's how they deal with all this stuff. For me, it's just training hard. That gives me the confidence. Going into a fight, walking the walk, and knowing that I did everything I have to do. That's what gives me the release, the relief, and the confidence. And I'm good to go, you know. Knowing that I did my rounds, I had my runs, I'm not gonna get tired. I go in there just confident and go to work. That's what it is for me, just doing the work and the hard training, you know.
Yeah. So in a way, that's almost like your therapy, being able to train.
Yeah.
Right? Because I can tell you have like a lot of pressure now, and like, you know, people are expecting stuff out of you. Whereas before, you could just train and fight just because it was fun to do.
Yeah,
you
know,
train now and go
like,
to the link.
Exactly. Yeah, go to the link. You know, go valet some cars. But now it's like, hey, if I start losing these fights, it's back to the link.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? No, fuck that.
You know.
No, yeah, that's why I'm telling you. I always keep in mind my goals. I wanna make a lot of money. I wanna the things I just told you. You know, I wanna make a lot of money. I wanna make history. Those are the things that I keep in mind, and help me push through whatever it is. You know, if it is a session that I don't wanna do because I'm tired or this and that, I always keep in mind, hey, I want that, and this is the way I have to do this. You know. So I don't, for me, motivation, I put it on the side. I'm very disciplined. Discipline is what brought me to where I am today. And I ignore my feelings sometimes, you know. I know what I have to do, and I just get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
What do I see myself?
He asked job interview questions.
What are your strengths and what are your weaknesses? Yeah.
What do I see myself? I'm going to be 33. I'm going to be double champ in PFL. You know? Yeah, I'm going to be 145 champion and 155 champion. I'm going to be living in Lake Las Vegas in a big ass house.
Yeah.
Driving a nice Mercedes with my wife and probably having kids by then in five years. Just being at my best, being at my prime. And yeah, traveling, just fighting, living a good life.
There you go.
And we still going to be doing this podcast 5 years from now.
Hopefully you still have time for us.
Of course. Don't forget about it. We should do like ringside interviews at that point.
But by then we got to do something different and be making a barbecue, a carne asada or something, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Something a little bit different. But definitely we're going to be here. Hopefully you guys keep growing. I like what you guys are doing.
This is
pretty cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's been good having a talk with you guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much for giving us your time. And for all the people that might not know where they can find you, can you share how they can get in contact with you, social media?
Yeah. You guys can find me on Instagram, Brian Surcher. It's a little bit weird
El Brian.
Spelling. B-R-A-H-Y-A-N. Zurcher, my last name with the Z, Zurcher. You guys can find me on Instagram and YouTube and, you know, all the social media.
For sure. And stay updated. Follow him so you know when the next fight's going to be. Unfortunately, as we were talking about earlier, the last fight got canceled. But I guess we don't have a date set, so we won't say it on camera. But hopefully you'll get a fight before the end of the year.
Yeah, I think it's for sure that we're gonna get one more fight before the end of the year. And next year is gonna be a very exciting year for me, you know. Not a lot of people knows PFL. PFL is one of the biggest organizations in the world besides UFC and all those companies. And what PFL does is a different format.
Yep.
So every year they have a tournament in every weight class.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have 10 guys. They start the season in April, so you have 10 guys, and just like a regular tournament, you have regular season, so you have two fights in regular season. You need to make points to go to the playoffs. You find the semifinals, and then you go to the final. So you have a total of four fights in 8 months. If you win those four fights, you become the champion, and you win $1 million.
Yep.
And this is an opportunity that I've been begging for and that I've been working for, and now it's finally happening. So next year I'm going to be in the season. It's going to be my first time in the season. And the only thing I can guarantee is that I'm going to give my all to try to become the champion next year and win that $1 million.
So next year you're going to be a millionaire.
Yes. I'm about to apply too. Don't tell me it's too late.
I'm
about to apply too for $1 million.
Carne asada on you.
Yeah, I got you guys. So for you, first training tomorrow. We're doing sparring. Sparring
wait
tomorrow.
Wait till Saturday. You got to go up to Mount Charleston and run them 7 miles.
That's even worse. Yeah. I fucking hate that run, bro. It's crazy.
Yeah. But stay up to date, man. Follow our pages because we were talking about it off camera. If it is where you said in November, I feel like we'll pull up.
Yeah, we pulling up. I don't know where it is, but we pulling up for sure.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Let them know where they can find you guys on social media.
Oh, you guys could get me on Instagram at Ocho Benji.
Y'all can follow me. All platforms at N2DATK.
Follow my personal Instagram. It's going to be at AKBTG. Follow the podcast page on therun.pod. Go follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Thank you guys so much for all the support. We'll see you guys next week for another episode, man. Peace.
Saludos a toda la raza.